everyone, and welcome back to another True Potential Do More With Your Money podcast. This week, I'm joined by John, Kevin, and Chris in the studio. There's been a statement this week. It is autumn, so it must have been the autumn statement. And over the next 20 minutes or so, we're going to go through that and talk about what it might mean to you and your investments. I'm going to come to you first, Chris. As it's your first time on the podcast, I'm going to chuck you in straight into the deep
end.
Let's
do it.
I want to talk about the new state pension changes that were announced this week. That'll make a big difference to anybody who's in receipt of a state pension, or anyone who's perhaps planning ahead and going to be in receipt of that in the near future. So would you first of all just tell us what was announced this week, who it affects, and what your view of it was?
Yeah, absolutely. So there's a bit of excitement leading up to this one, because there was some speculation that the Chancellor might bend some of the rules that they'd put in place. But actually the big reveal turned out that there was no change. So the triple lock, as it's known, remained. And what is the triple lock? So what it was is a commitment that goes back to 2011. And the triple lock consists of that the state pension, the new state pension and the old basic state pension will increase by at least a guaranteed minimum of 2.5% or CPI, so the consumer price index, inflation, or average earnings. And as we know in the world, the world's been in a bit of a twist since COVID. Inflation's been all over the place. Yeah. So we got some pretty high readings, which has impacts on, I suppose, government finances, doesn't it? So there was some conjecture as to whether or not there'd be a bit of a fudge and actually use a slightly lower number than was supposed to be used. But actually, the Chancellor came out.
The triple lock is, a lot of that speculation is because it's expensive to do that, especially when inflation and earnings and so on are higher than they've been perhaps since that was first introduced, as you say, in 2011.
Yeah. And actually what was revealed was that they're going to stand by the commitment. So they went with the highest of the three readings in September, which was the average earnings. And that the reason why it was so high actually was because it included bonuses that actually probably inflated the inflation even more. So what it actually means to us all who are going to be getting a new state pension is that it will increase by 8.5% from next year. So in pounds and pence, in weekly amounts, it'll go up from the current full state pension, if you're eligible for the full state pension, is £203.85 a week, and that's going to go up to £221.20. So it's quite a significant increase, actually.
Yeah, quite a big increase there. Yeah. And John, I'll come across to you. People, perhaps clients who are looking at their app and trying to look at what perhaps they're going to forecast to get from their personal pension, they can also factor in state pension into those calculations, can't they, and see how this increase perhaps will affect their retirement planning. Are they the kind of conversations you've been having this week and things you've been thinking about?
Absolutely. Whenever we're setting goals up for clients, we're looking at, you know, where's your starting point? What's the basic level of income that you're going to have in retirement? And the state pension's usually a good place to start with that. I think, you know, come April, when it does go up by the 8.5%, if you've got, say, a married couple, they're close to £23,000 a year they're going to be bringing in if they've got a full new state pension each. So we can use that as a sort of starting point. You've got your baseline £23,000.
Yeah.
How much would you want to spend in retirement, ideally? Mm-hmm. And then we can start to use, like you say, the app to model whether their personal pensions are going to be able to achieve that for them or not.
Yeah. And did that, I mean, Chris has talked about the triple lock. Perhaps, you know, there was some speculation around that, but to... you know, did it come a bit of a surprise from your point of view, Kevin, as well? Or did you, were you always confident they were going to keep the triple lock?
I thought they might have taken the opportunity to not raise it in line with inflation, just to try and build up a bit of a buffer for maybe business investment. But they went ahead and did it. So it is what it is.
Would have been quite a brave thing to have done, wouldn't it? Given that, you know, typically people of an older age are you sort of, you're guaranteed voters.
Given we've got a general election coming up.
It
can be an activist cohort. Yes. They obviously wanted to keep them on side. So,
It would have been interesting politics to have made a change to that a year out from an election. But anyway, there you go. Yeah. Okay. So that's the state pension. That was, if you like, one of the big sort of flagship announcements, if you like, or one of the ones that got a lot of attention from the autumn statement. The other, of course, was national insurance. And I'll come to you, John, for this one. So same kind of question. What was announced? How does it work? And who's affected?
Yeah, absolutely. So I felt when I was listening to the statement, there was a bit of something for everyone. We've talked about the those who are already retired and receive their state pension. And We had a bit of a change to national insurance, which affects not only employed individuals, but also people who are self-employed as well. There was kind of a range of measures introduced. So for your employed individuals, your workers, a 2% cut to the, well, it's reduced by 2% in terms of the rate that you're paying national insurance from 12% to 10%. What does that mean? You know, the rate at which you pay national insurance, you're obviously going to see a little bit less deducted off your payslip each month when you're an employed individual. A little bit more money in the public's pocket.
Yeah.
A little bit of a pressure valve being eased when it comes to how tough inflation has been for a lot of people. So, you know, a reasonable reduction in the sort of tax burden for individuals. And then you come to the self-employed side of things. Class 2 national insurance contributions, which self-employed people pay, that's been completely abolished. You know, if you take an average self-employed person earning the average amount a self-employed person does, it's about £192 a year that they've got returned to their pocket. Coming in from January, in fact, rather than the new tax year.
Well, that's interesting. Why normally these announcements you get in a budget or an open statement, they come in the new tax year, which of course is April. So why is this one being announced in or coming into effect from January, do you think?
Well, in my opinion, I think Kevin's probably answered this already. It's obviously a political move. To be fair, to be welcomed, any tax cut, the sooner the better, quite frankly. But I think it's fairly obvious that it's a political move.
Yeah. And in terms of the cash, so you mentioned self-employment, but in terms of employees, what figures are we expecting people to be saving through this reduction? What is it? Has there been any speculation on how much that's going to help the average person, let's say? Or
yeah, so if you've got your personal allowance, you know, everyone's allowed to earn £12,570 before they start paying tax, and national insurance was actually aligned with that not too long ago. So whatever amount you earn above that personal allowance, let's say it's, you know, £20,000 above the personal allowance, because you've had a reduction of 2%. I've set myself up for some maths here.
I can tell you what I'm working out as we're going through
that. You're probably looking at, you know, sort of £400. You're paying less in national insurance for that sort of salary. And, you know, if your earnings are a little bit higher, of course, that benefits you. You know, your reduction is slightly more generous.
Yeah.
Closer to the personal allowance you get, you're obviously not quite
so. And, of course, I remember watching the news the night before the autumn statement, and 1% was talked about. Again, I suspect there was a little bit of media management going on there, and then we'll surprise you with a 2% and look really generous. What was interesting, though, was that they chose national insurance rather than income tax. Any thoughts on why they didn't choose to cut the rates of income tax, for example? Why would they opt for national insurance, not income tax?
Well, I think the most interesting thing is that the cut comes through on the 6th of January. So I wonder if they wouldn't have been able to put through an income tax cut until maybe the 4th of April, the new tax year. But by being able to bring forward the national insurance cut, more people will feel it in their pockets going into the spring.
Yeah.
And it may bring forward the likelihood of a general election from the autumn to the spring if inflation follows this downward path.
Yeah. I mean, I suppose there's the other side of it, which is that the basic rates of income, the income tax rates affect far more people than just people who are in work. I mean, pensions, for example, are subject to income tax, aren't they?
Yeah.
Whereas the mix is purely aimed at people who are in work. And I think this was an open statement around supporting or encouraging work and getting into work, and therefore targeting people who are in work with a tax code. Is that fair? Or
am I reading too much into it, Chris? No, I totally agree. And I think that's the messaging that the Conservative government are trying to portray, isn't it? Yeah. That they're a pro-work, pro-business government. So I think, again, that was a political message. I think another thing actually that probably goes slightly under the radar is that if it was income tax, it wouldn't automatically apply to Scotland. The Scottish government have default powers over income tax. They could have chosen to follow that through, but there probably would have been a lag behind that. Whereas actually the government can say, well, actually this is UK-wide straight away.
And presumably much cheaper than reducing, you know, 2 percentage points off income tax because of more people pay income tax through various other ways. Yep. I'm guessing, therefore, it's the cheaper of the two options as
Absolutely.
Well. So, you know, he saved himself some money doing it that way as well.
Yeah.
All right.
The names Peter and Paul speak to mind in a few of these things.
No, it's Peter and John.
Well,
I see what you mean. Yes. So, okay, that's interesting. So, I mean, the other thing is there more to come? I mean, I think you said this was the start and not the main course. So, what's for the main course then, John? Do you reckon?
Yeah, I think it is an autumn statement. You have your main budget in the spring usually, and the autumn's meant to be a sort of more calm affair. Obviously, we didn't have that 12 months ago. We had a bit of a furore around what happened this time last year, but I think a lot of the debate to be had will be, does it go far enough? Mm. I'm sure he's Jeremy Hunt's probably hoping to keep something in the back pocket because we are going into an election year. So I don't think necessarily he's played all of his played all of his cards. But
and I guess some of this also was because we had the news, was it last week, inflation had come down to below the target the government had said in terms of halving inflation. So I mean, they tried, I think, to link it to that good news. Whether it is actually linked is, perhaps up for some debate. So maybe there isn't quite enough good news yet just to be able to go further on some of these tax cuts. And we need to wait and see what happens now over the next few months, probably why it's seen as a first step and not anything more dramatic than just that. Is that?
I think Jeremy Hunt also is naturally quite cautious. Mm. And actually, we've seen the chalk and cheese approach compared with the Liz Truss government.
Well, so that's an interesting point. What's the difference? How come a year ago she wanted to cut taxes and look what happened, the roof fell in, and he's gone and cut taxes and it hasn't had the same reaction? What's the difference?
Well, there's two. Liz Truss's tax cuts were more severe. They were also entirely uncosted. Herself and the Chancellor then had excluded the OBR from providing some independent analysis. And inflation was expected to go above 10% and would have been closer to 19% if it wasn't for the energy price cap. As you said, we've now had a surprise in inflation down to just above 4.5%. It's likely inflation will possibly have a 3 handle, so maybe 3 point something come the budget in April. And I would estimate that if, for instance, pensioners are getting 8.5% uplift and inflation, say, in the low threes, the Chancellor will have the room to do another surprise, but again with an eye on a spring election, just to see what the growth backdrop is then as well.
I'd be very surprised if it's a spring election.
We'll
have this now. Actually, just around the table then, just so we can play this back in, I don't know, May or something, and see if I was wrong or whatever. Who thinks there's now more chance of an early election? I'm going to still go for November next year. I think we're a year away, but I'm interested to know what you three think.
Yeah, I think for me, it will certainly be towards the latter part of the year. I think the government will want to wait for as much good news to come out as possible, whether or not they're responsible for it. we look at interest rates, they're obviously quite level at the moment.
Yeah.
You're hoping that they might have room to perhaps nudge downwards, maybe in the second half of next year. And I could see a situation where the government kind of use that positivity, those good headlines to kind of take a little bit of credit and say, well, let's have an election just now.
Yeah.
Yes, home team advantage, isn't it? Calling an election, so they will certainly do it when it suits the government. I think we've kind of alluded to this. They're looking for momentum, aren't they? Political momentum. So if you set the bar relatively low, it gives you more scope to do that in the future.
Yeah.
I can't really see many upsides given the state of public opinion at the moment. UK economic performance, et cetera, for it to be called sooner rather than later.
Yeah.
I would imagine they would take as much time as they can to build that momentum, to hopefully get inflation down further. Then they can hammer home that as a positive policy outcome, et cetera.
So you're going for a back end of next year?
Yeah, as late as possible, I think, for the current government, I would imagine.
Go on, Kevin, be different, be brave.
I think the chances of a spring election have gone up.
Yeah.
I think they would ideally not like to hold it in the autumn because it will clash with the US election and Donald Trump is as likely to hog the headlines as much as any Jeremy Hunt giveaway. So I think ideally if the economic situation allows, possibly a late May, early June.
I suppose the other thing is, these tax cuts that we've seen this week, but also, if there are going to be more in the March or April budget, they'll want to allow time for that to be felt through in people's pay packets and to begin to feel some of that perhaps without going too soon. But we'll see. Right. Another big announcement, of course, was this so-called pension pot for life. Now, people listening to this might think, well, my pension is for life. Mm. It's mine. So what's this all about? So explain, Chris, if you would. what they mean by a pension pot for life. That was talked about this week. What does that mean, and what difference might it make to people's retirement planning and their lives?
Yeah, this is an interesting one because, as you say, you want pension pot is for life anyway. And actually, interestingly, this bit of an aside, but some pension pots these days, some pension pots are actually afterlife as well. You can pass them on, of course. But what Jeremy Hunt has said is that he's going to consult on giving people an actually entrenched or legal right to effectively demand that their employer pays into a pension pot of their choice. Now, that sounds fantastic, doesn't it, on the as a headline, pro-choice. What could be wrong with that? The reality is that actually it's very complicated thing to implement, quite frankly. But actually the bigger picture with it all is just an acknowledgement that is probably consensus, actually, that the UK pension market is highly fragmented. It's actually really complex operation in general. So any ideas to consolidate, to simplify things, and to empower people actually to get involved in their own retirement planning is a good thing. It's just, it's a highly regulated market. So it's going to be quite a difficult one to implement. And actually, first thoughts are initially the burden that would give to employers would be quite a hefty one. So you're kind of talking auto-enrollment 2.0, but actually would be quite burdensome. So it'd be interesting which direction the consultation, as in it's early, it's early doors still, but we'll see what comes out of the consultation, because I think it's going to be quite complicated.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because I suppose what they're trying to tackle is the idea that people have got lots of pension pots from different employers over the years. If the average person has, I don't know, you know, 8, 9, 10 different jobs in their career, you could end up with
some witch research, isn't there? The consumer group that they think going forward, the average retiree will have 11 pots, which is just administratively is quite burdensome.
Well, it's just interesting, isn't it? Because they spent 7 years inventing the pension dashboard to solve that.
So,
and then, you know, that's now a thing. And then we're going to have one pot for life. So
that was that was one of the things I was going to say as well. Integrated into all of this is something called pensions dashboard, which, again, great idea, but it's been beset by delays, which is, a surprise for a government initiative to be subject to delays, isn't it? The idea behind that is great, actually, though, because it would effectively provide a single view. So in this day and age, I think probably most of us would expect to have some kind of technology to be able to, in one place, see all the pension pots. And that's the idea behind it. And actually to integrate the state pension into that as well. So as and when that is landed, that will be fantastic. But again, it's more complex than it seems at the outset. So my opinion on this is that actually that's probably the better way of going. Rather than, I suppose, dragging employees into it, quite frankly.
I think Chris is right. It's almost taking the moment you arrive at retirement with a host of pension pots, that administrative burden's on the individual, whereas it seems this measure's kind of shifting that burden to employers. You know, you might have, 500 staff in this building. You know, at the moment, they all pay into one singular pension. It's, the true potential pension. Whereas if you've got 500 staff who all want paying into a host of pensions that they've already got, it's more work for employers. So it's, I guess, a question of, is that a good thing? Is it better for the employers to deal with that or the individual as they come into retirement?
Yeah, good point. Well, you mentioned businesses. Let's move on to the next one I wanted to talk about, which was the tax cuts that were aimed at businesses. We've talked about them for individuals. But what was announced this week, John, then on business tax cuts?
Yeah, so in terms of business, it's an idea to help to continue to promote investment. The government clearly wants companies to, plough money into improvement, investment, efficiency, productivity to try and, make the country a better performing country economically. So the idea behind these business tax cuts is this idea of what they call full expensing. So if a business decides to purchase some machinery or, invest in some technology that will help their business, what the business can do is immediately offset that against the profit that they've made. So, if I've made a profit of £100,000 and I spend every penny on some technology or machinery, I can reclaim the tax that I would have otherwise paid on that that particular purchase. So it's a 25% relief on investment on purchases. And it's, they call it plant and machinery, which I always think of, you know, diggers and trucks and that sort of thing. But it's
those things.
Well, yes, the things on the table, Peter. But it's things like computers, tables, office equipment. You know, if businesses want to modernize and make themselves more efficient, then that could be caught into it as well.
Interesting. Okay. Why didn't they, why do you think they didn't make any changes to ISAs? I mean, I know we're coming back to individuals now rather than businesses, but they did change pensions. They changed, you know, some of the architecture around Pots for Life, as we've talked about, but they left ISA allowances the same. Was that a missed opportunity, do you think, or is there a good reason why?
This might be the rabbit out the hat in the next announcement, a future one. I mean, they did some tinkering. There was some documentation released afterwards where they are allowed. So at the minute, you effectively are allowed to pay into one stocks and shares ISA and or one cash ISA. Mm. And actually, they're going to change that. Yeah. So you can pay into multiple stocks and shares.
So there was a simplification, but no change in the allowances.
I'm not sure if it's going to make things simpler, but they've certainly tweaked with it. But there was a lot of proponents looking to either increase allowances, which would have been great, or actually make them. There was a big lobby to make them more UK centric in terms of investments that could be held within them to help UK PLC. And they were silent on that, but maybe that's one for the future.
Next,
we'll see.
Maybe next time around. Kevin, come back to you finally then, just on how's the markets and the broader, well, actually the two things. One's how's the markets reacted to this? I mean, we know a year ago how they reacted. So tell me a bit about how they've reacted this time around, but also the OBR as part of the Autumn Statement, the Chancellor gave some forecasts and revised forecasts. Just give us the top line on exactly where we are in the economy.
So not a lot has changed. I mean, it's a holiday week in the US, so markets are a bit quiet. Government borrowing yields costs have risen a bit since the announcement. I wouldn't put too much weight on it. The main adjustment has been the chances of rate cuts from the Bank of England next year have reduced just a little bit, but the UK is still expected to have the first rate cut sometime in the spring. So I think at the summary level, this hasn't really changed the growth outlook. What has come through, though, is that growth has been much stronger post-COVID than was thought. The economy is in a stronger foothold than was expected just in March. The broader outlook globally is that we've had inflation surprises in the US, the UK, and in Europe in the last 2 weeks, all to the downside, all showing a real slowdown in price pressures. In fact, inflation in the month of October for the UK and US was zero. And if the last 6 months is replicated through the first 6 months of next year, all major economies will have inflation back at target. So that would be very good for consumers. It would be very good for spending. It would be very good for equity markets. So for clients who own equities in their portfolio, which is pretty much all. And one of the reasons why markets have done so well over the last 3-4 weeks is equity markets are looking to that drop in inflation next year and realizing that it could lead to surprising rate cuts, beginning with the Bank of England.
Good. Okay. Right. Finally, then, give me a mark out of 10. Your view on the Autumn Statement, then. Was it if 10's the best and 1's the worst? Give me a number.
I mean, it wasn't a barnstormer, was it? Any tax cuts are good. I'll give it a 6.
Okay.
I was going to say 5.5 before Chris gave it a 6. I'm going to stick with 5.5.
All right.
Yeah. Well, I'm feeling positive about it. So I think there's, like I say, there's a little bit of a rub on the back for everybody. There's probably subsections of the population who were disappointed with some of it. We'll go 6.5. Just because there was a bit of something for everyone to get their teeth into.
All right. Okay. Well, he's got a bit more work to do by the sounds of it to persuade you all to give him a higher mark. Okay. Well, look, thank you very much for that. It was a good summary of what was announced this week and what it means. So thank you, Chris, Kevin, and John. And thank you also for watching. Hope that was useful. And as I always say, if you want to discuss any of it with your financial advisor, that is always a good idea. And if you want to discuss it with us, John, Chris, the team, all here, all you got to do is get in touch with us. And there are loads of ways to do that. But the quickest way probably is through the app and the client side. So have a look at that. And if you've got any questions, we'd be happy to answer them. And also, while you're on, don't forget to give it a like and a subscribe to this channel. And we'll see you next time. Thanks for watching. Bye.